I'm Dina, compulsive overeater and anorexic. I have 10 and a half years of continuous food sobriety and a delta of about 40 pounds of weight loss and weight gain over the years. And first I'll go over what it was like then and what it's like now. So first I would like to go over what I consider the anorexic's template. It's fairly representative. I grew up in a family that was, it was a family of good providers. My mother and father did the best they could, but it was a very controlling and critical type of atmosphere. They had very high expectations. And so I was the first child. So I internalized a lot of these feelings. I was good enough the way I was. I had to be perfect or I would be abandoned. I developed this craving to please others. I had to perform in order to earn love and acceptance. I had to be the good girl and never complain or whine. I could never show my true feelings or I would be cast out. So I became very good at developing masks and trying to figure out what people wanted and deliver it to them before I could be criticized or punished. So one of the things about me was, so I had a brother and I had a large extended family here in San Diego. So everyone else liked to eat, but for some reason I didn't like eating, whatever. And I was always the last person to finish in my family, breakfast, lunch, dinner. And so it became a battleground. That was back in the days where, you know, they're starving kids in name the place. And so my mother took it as it became a bone of contention. And so I was made to sit at the table for a while. And then it progressed to physical, corporal punishment, right? Back in those days, it was not considered that big a deal. So what she used was my father's belts, a strap. And so I remember being chased around the house and I had to lift my skirt up and she would go whack, whack, whack to raise it. And I would get welts on the back of my thighs and my butt and everything and yelling and screaming. And so that was pretty traumatic for me. And that was the kind of thing that I got punished for. So I learned to associate that kind of experience with food. And so later, what happened was I learned to be extremely focused on authority figures, meaning my parents. At kindergarten age, my brother and I were sent to a parochial school, and I got to take on more authority figures. Our teachers, some nuns became our teachers, and also the concept of a very patriarchal God. And he was the biggest bully to me because guess what? He could look into my mind. I had no censors. He could actually punish me for even the thoughts I was thinking. My masks didn't work against this new type of authority figure. So anyway, I had two main periods of active anorexia. The first was in my mid-20s when I was living with other young women. And I'll describe some of the symptoms. And then it went underground as I got married, got divorced, became a single mom, became a workaholic, and my weight went up and down with yo-yo dieting. And then my second period of anorexia in my early 50s. So some of the things I did while anorexic, where I stopped menstruating in my first anorexia, and I started losing my hair, my muscle tone, and I did like really, really crazy things. I acted out a lot. And I obsessively collected recipes. I would go to the library back then when they had libraries and people went to libraries. And I dreamt about food all the time. I had food dreams. I competed with my roommates, and I was really good at starving. But it was all supposedly to get boyfriends, but I completely lost all sexual desire because all of my energy was deployed toward keeping my body going, right? You know, who has time for men? It was all for show. And then later on, in my second period of anorexia, I remember doing things like, now I was engaged at the time, and I remember my fiance's best friends, they prepared this beautiful 4-course meal for us. I literally didn't touch one single bite, which is very hurtful. I remember going to visit various therapists. I remember being so malnourished at times that I almost fainted while driving back and forth on the freeways. I could have killed someone. I could have killed myself. I could have killed someone. How awful. And I had other physical problems, heart palpitations, brain fog. And of course, I went through therapists. I went to an eating disorder specialist, and she was selling me proprietary weight gain products and all kinds of things. But finally, my current therapist, thank God, he's the one who told me about Overeaters Anonymous. And I said, what are you, crazy? I'm not overweight. You know, what is your issue, man? That was my attitude towards everything. You think you're the boss of me? Obviously, I had a very deep emotional disease, because this is the three-legged stool. That's what they tell you in the big book. And by the way, my fiance I knew about AA through him, but so I knew it was a three-legged stool. I knew about physical recovery and emotional and spiritual. But so I thought I knew about it, but obviously I didn't know very much about it. So I went to my first OA meeting on a dare because my therapist insisted. He said, just go to one meeting. And so I said, okay, because I wanted to prove him wrong, which was my motivation for so many things. So I looked it up on the website, San Diego. As soon as I walked into the rooms, I realized that I was home. I heard people share their stories. And fortunately, I saw myself in so many of those stories. Even though I'm anorexic, I could identify with the feelings of being isolated, of being wounded, of seeking, and just using food in various ways to comfort myself and, you know, everything else. And so I was very fortunate because I got a sponsor that very first meeting. And with her guidance, we developed an eating plan. I sent in my food. We did check-ins. I went to meetings. I did lots of service.
10 minutes.
Great. Thank you, Carol. I did a committed step study every year. which was amazingly helpful. The Big Book was a big part of that, because as we found, it's as if you go through it and it's like, oh, I don't remember seeing this before. Did somebody rewrite the Big Book? Because you grow in this journey. And what you get, if you're really working it, is you get a reprieve. You get a reprieve. No one is ever cured of the disease, but you're recovered because you have had a spiritual awakening. So anyway, so obviously what I'm going to go into is how fundamental the Big Book was and is to my recovery. And so for the rest of this, I'm going to talk about God. My current concept of a higher power is quite different than the one I was taught. And for convenience sake, I will just use the term God because it's easier to say. So anyway, when I was in the depths of my anorexia, there were many things that I tried to put in the director's chair instead of God. So this was something that made such a huge difference when I was the first time I read it. And since then, it's always made a difference. It starts on page 60, and it's pages 60 through 63. And it starts when we talk about step three. And towards the bottom, and it's talking about how any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And it says, each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. And that's so mean. You know, if only people would do what I want them to, life would be so great. And so they don't. And so like, I'll get very critical, or maybe I'll be so sweet, you know, sweet, sweet as can be, but they still don't do what I want. And it's like, why don't they do it? So the point is, there's only one director, and that director is God. Duh, get it into your head. But I have to keep going. You know, I have to keep working program. So anyway, these were some of the things I tried to put in the director's chair instead of God. Numbers on the scale. You know, it was like, okay, how much do I weigh? And that was a constantly moving target because it's like, oh, yay, I got down to this certain point. Well, is that enough? No, I need to keep moving down. That is the constant torture for the anorexic, right? And another one, sizes of the clothing tags. Oh, is that enough? No, I need to keep going down. It's never skinny enough, right? And the BMI calculator, I'm sure some of you are familiar with that. It's like, oh, there, you know, like two tenths of a point. Nope. You know, and it doesn't even really mean that much because it doesn't measure like what your muscle tone is. And let's see, some other things. Physical pain. At my worst, that was how I measured. That was my index of success. It felt like when I was starving, it was like a knife blade in my stomach. So the sharper the pain, that meant I was doing things right. The mirror. That was something I put in the director's chair until it became reliable. I would be looking in the mirror and I could be like a stick and I would see a whale. People's feedback, they would say things like, Dina, stop. You look like a concentration camp victim, or, you know, stuff like that. And I would go, no, you know, you're lying. I don't believe you, blah, blah, blah. Crash diets were in the director's chair, and my arrogant belief that I could stick to them indefinitely till I really wanted to starve to death. It was self-destruction. And my emotions, spite, anger, revenge, me against the world, I'll show you, you blankety blank. So what it's like now, let's see. I got, how many, do I, Carol, how many minutes do I have left?
3.5.
3.5? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip ahead. The meetings and this. Okay. Right now I'm really working on my emotional sobriety because as an anorexic, control is a big character defect that often recurs. So, anytime I notice that I'm trying to control others, and that means judging, placing expectations, taking inventory, rushing in to do for them what they can do for themselves, micromanaging, finishing their sentences. It means I am pushing God out of the director's chair. And so ego, that's my ego, edging God out. And so what drives that control? Through doing lots of fourth step and 10 step inventories, I have found for me, it breaks down to my bottom line fears, abandonment, rejection, unlovability, unworthiness. So I also found that I've resisted. I was giving a lot of service to trusting God, but some part of me harbored a delusion that it was still up to me to fix myself. But that's just another disguise for self-will. So my sponsor reminded me, Dina, you can't help the way you were born. And I realized this really was a gift. I am just so grateful that I have this disease, because otherwise, I mean, I wouldn't be where I am among all of these beautiful people, and I wouldn't have this consciousness. I am just so friggin' grateful. So now I know that I can't dictate the exact outcome or the ways.
You're muted.
Okay, thank you. So yes, I know I have to turn over my problems to God, because God is the only one who can fix them. I do the footwork of the program, and then I turn it over. And I don't have any expectations, because only God can do it. And then finally, page 417, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. You know, I keep going back to that. And I think I'm just about out of time. Is that right, Carol? Okay. Acceptance and gratitude. Thank you so much for asking me to be here. Thank you.